Sue Foster is a partner with Mintz Levin based out of their London office. She works with clients on European data protection compliance and on commercial matters in the fields of clean tech, high tech, mobile media, and life sciences. She's a graduate of Stanford Law School. Susan is also, and we like this here at Verona, a certified information privacy professional. I'm very excited to be talking to an attorney with a CIPP and with direct experience on a compliance topic we cover on our blog, the EU General Data Protection Regulation, or GDPR. Welcome, Susan.
Hi, Eddie. Thank you very much for inviting me to join you today. There's a lot going on in Europe around cybersecurity and data protection these days, so it's a fantastic set of topics.
Oh, terrific. So what are some of the concerns you're hearing from your clients on GDPR?
So one of the big concerns is getting to grips with the extraterritorial reach. So I work with a number of companies that don't have any office or other kind of presence in Europe that would qualify them as being established in Europe. But they are offering goods or services to people in Europe. And for these companies, you know, in the past, they've had to go through quite a bit of analysis to understand if the GDPR applies to them. Under the former Data Protection Directive applies to them. Under the GDPR, it's a lot clearer, and there are rules that are easier for people to understand and follow. So now, when I speak to my U.S. clients, if they're a non-resident company that promotes goods or services in the EU, including free services, like a free app, for example, they'll be subject to the GDPR. That's very clear. Also, if a non-resident company is monitoring the behavior of people who are located in the EU, including tracking and profiling people based on their internet or device usage, or making automated decisions about people based on their personal data, the company is subject to the GDPR. It's also really important for U.S. companies to understand that there's a new e-privacy regulation in draft form that would cover any provider, regardless of location, of any form of publicly available electronic communication services to EU users. Under this e-privacy regulation, the notion of what these communication services providers are is expanded from the current rules, and it includes things that are called over-the-top applications, so messaging apps and communication features. Even when a communication feature is just something that's embedded in a website, if it's available to the public and it enables communication, even in a very limited sort of forum, it's going to be covered. That's another area where, you know, U.S. companies are getting to grips with the fact that European rules will apply to them. This new security directive as well, that may apply to companies located outside the EU. So all of these things are combining to suddenly force a lot of U.S. companies to get to grips with European law.
Right. So just to clarify, a small U.S. social media company that doesn't market specifically to EU countries, doesn't have a website in the language of some EU country, they would or would not fall under the GDPR?
They would then, so on the basis of their marketing activities, they wouldn't.
Right.
But we would need to understand if they're profiling or tracking EU users, the viral marketing that's been going on, right? And they are just tracking everybody, and they know that they're tracking people in the EU. Then they're going to be caught. But if they're not doing that, if not engaging in any kind of tracking and profiling or monitoring activities, and they're not affirmatively marketing into the EU, then they're outside of the scope. Unless, of course, they're offering some kind of service that falls under one of these other regulations that we were talking about.
Right. Okay. Interesting. What we're hearing from our customers is that the 72-hour breach rule for reporting is a source of concern. And our customers are confused, and after looking at some of the fine print, we are as well. So I'm wondering if you can explain the breach reporting in terms of thresholds of what needs to happen before a report is made to the DPAs and consumers.
Sure, absolutely. So first, it's important to look at the specific definition of personal data breach. So it means a breach of security leading to the accidental or unlawful destruction, loss, alteration, unauthorized disclosure of, or access to personal data. Okay. So it's fairly broad. Okay. The requirement to report these incidents has a number of caveats, right? So you have to report the breach to the data protection authority as soon as possible. and where feasible, no later than 72 hours after becoming aware of the breach. Then there's a set of exceptions, and that is unless the personal data breach is unlikely to result in a risk to the rights and freedoms of natural persons. So I can understand why U.S. companies would look at this and sort of say, I don't really know what that means. How do I know if a breach is likely to result in the risks to the rights and freedoms of natural persons? Because that's not defined anywhere in this regulation. So it's important to understand that that little bit of text is EU speak. That really refers to the Charter of Fundamental Rights of the European Union, which is part of EU law. So there is actually a document you can look at to tell you what these rights and freedoms are. But you can think of it basically in common sense terms. Are the person's privacy rights affected? Are their rights and sort of the integrity of their communications affected, or is their property affected? So you could, for example, say that there's a breach that isn't likely to reveal information that I would consider like personally compromising in a privacy perspective, but it could lead to fraud, right? So that could affect my property rights. So that would be one of those issues.
Right.
So basically, most of the time you're going to have to report the breach.
Okay.
So when you're going through the process of working out whether you need to report the breach to the DPA and you're considering whether or not you have the breach is likely to result in a risk to the rights and freedoms of natural persons, one of the things that you can look at is whether people are practically protected or whether there's a minimal risk because of steps you've already taken, such as encrypting data, right, or pseudonymizing data, and you know that the key that would allow re-identification of the subjects hasn't been compromised. So these are some of the things that you can think about when determining whether or not you need to report to the Data Protection Authority. You then, say you decide you have to report, you then need to think about, do you need to report the breach to the data subjects, right? And the standard there is that it has to be a high risk to the rights and freedoms of natural persons. So a high risk to someone's privacy rights or rights in their property and things of that sort. And again, you can look at the steps that you have taken to either prevent the data from, before it even was leaked, prevent it from being potentially vulnerable in a format where people could be damaged, or you could think also whether you've taken steps after the breach that would prevent those kinds of risks from happening. Now, of course, the problem is the risk of getting it wrong, right? So if you decide that you're not going to report after you go through this full analysis and the DPA disagrees with you, now you're running the risk of a fine based on 2% of the group's global turnover, so say the a corporate group's gross revenue around the world. And that, I think, is going to lead to a lot of companies being cautious in reporting when even they might have been able to take advantage of some of these exceptions, but they won't feel comfortable with that.
I see. So just to bring it to more practical terms, so we can assume that, let's say, a credit card numbers or some other identification number, if that was breached or taken, would have to be reported both to the DPA and the consumer? Or
Most likely.
Most likely.
Yeah. I mean, almost certainly. Yeah. Particularly if the security code on the back of the card has been compromised, and absolutely you've got a pretty urgent situation. You also have a responsibility to basically provide a risk assessment to the individuals and advise them on steps that they can take to protect themselves, such as canceling their card immediately.
Right. One hypothetical that I wanted to ask you about is the Yahoo breach, which actually technically happened a few years ago. I think it was over 2 years ago. If that breach, let's say something like that had happened after the GDPR, where a company had sort of had known that there was something happening, it looked like a breach, they didn't know the extent of it. If they had not reported it and waited after the 72-hour rule, what would have happened to, let's say, a multinational like Yahoo?
Yeah, well, Yahoo would... they would need to go through the same analysis, and it's hard to imagine that a breach on that scale and with the level of access that was provided to the Yahoo users' accounts as a result of those breaches, and, of course, the fact that people know that it's very common for individuals to reuse passwords across different sites, and so you have the risk of sort of follow-on problems. It's hard to imagine they would be in a situation where they would be off the hook for reporting. Right. Now, the 72-hour rule is not hard and fast, but the idea is that you report as soon as possible. So you can delay for a little while if it's necessary for, say, a law enforcement investigation, right? That's one possibility. Or if you're doing your own internal investigation and somehow that would be compromised or taking security measures that would be compromised in some way by reporting it to the DPA, but that'll be pretty rare. And so, you know, obviously going on for months and months and not reporting it would be on the pale. Yeah. And I would say, yeah, a company like Yahoo would potentially be facing a fine of 2% of its worldwide revenue.
Right. So it's really serious business, especially for multinationals.